Lamy Olympics. Unofficial, unauthorized, and unbeatable. The compete story with 300 quiz questions. By Michael Coleman. He's for the high jump. Illustrated by Aiden Potts and Mike Phillips. To Stephen for research support and a personal fitness program. Read by Vienna Vance. Introduction. In August 2008, the Summer Olympic Games will be held in Beijing, China, a modern version of a competition which began in 776 BC. Been running long, mate? Yeah, 2,500 years. Yes, the Olympic flame is returning to where it was first kindled. So let's start with a question. Why do you think this book is called Flaming Olympics? Is it because Summer Olympics are always held in hot weather? Running tracks used to be made out of cinders? Lots of races are held in heats? The man who started the Olympics was a bright spark? Sorry, if you've picked one of these, you're wrong. Here's another for you to choose from. Do you think this book is called Flaming Olympics because there have been loads of scorching performances at the Olympics? There have been plenty of red faces at the Olympics? There have been lots of flashy characters at the Olympics? There have been dozens of blazing rows at the Olympics? You've said yes to one of these? Now you're getting warmer. Over the 100 years since the Olympic Games started, again, there have been stacks of red-hot performances and stacks of red faces and stacks of flashy characters and stacks of blazing rows. But none of these reasons are exactly why the book's called Flaming Olympics. So why is it? Check out the word flame in your dictionary. If you do, you'll see that one of its meanings is something like to become violently excited, passionately, or angry. It's my turn to carry the torch. No, it flaming well isn't. And that's why this book is called Flaming Olympics. It's because, of all the sporting occasions in the world, none has seen as many exciting or passionate or angry incidents take place as the Olympic Games. They had plenty in the ancient Olympics, which ran, well staggered, from at least 776 BC to AD 391. We've had loads more of them since the modern Games started in 1896. In fact, there have been so many amazing incidents over the years, it's a wonder the Olympic Games haven't been renamed the Olympic Fun and Games. And the best incidents from the Summer Olympics are all in this book. So if you want to amaze your friends and wow your teachers with tales of flaming Olympic champs and flaming Olympic chumps, flaming Olympic tracks and flaming Olympic tricks, flaming Olympic disputes and flaming Olympic disasters, then start reading. The Flaming Ancient Olympics. The Olympic Games aren't a new invention, you know. They've been around for well over 2,500 years. That's probably even before your teacher was born, although you might like to check to make sure. They were first held in the Kingdom of Elis in Greece at a site called Olympia, which is how the word Olympic came to be used. Check out your atlas. These places still exist. There's a powerful legend about how the games began. It's said that they were the invention of a Greek hero called Heracles. Heracles' big job. Now Heracles, or Hercules as he became more commonly known, was a sort of Greek version of Superman. He was supposed to be the son of Zeus, the Greek god in charge of thunder and lightning. A flaming Greek god if ever there was one. This might explain why Heracles was always having flashes of temper. One of his earliest occurred during a music lesson. Heracles objected to being told by his teacher, Linus, that his lyre playing wasn't very good. So what did he do? He swung his lyre and killed his teacher with one blow. Was this pop music's first number one hit? After that, Heracles went on to kill a few other creatures, including a lion, until one day he killed some of his own children. This made the gods pretty angry, and although Heracles said he was sorry, they decided that wasn't enough. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's Heracles! Heracles' work is never done. Meow! Heracles was given 12 jobs to carry out as a punishment, a sort of super detention. These jobs became known as the 12 labors of Heracles. One of them was for the king of Augea. Heracles put on his best suit and turned up on time. He soon realized that putting on his best suit had been a bad move. The conversation went something like this. Clean out my stables. Do it in one day. Got that? One day, eh? No time for any harassing about then. There are 3,000 oxen living in those stables. Phew. They do pong a bit. They haven't been cleaned out for 30 years. Any questions? Can I borrow your calculator, King? This sounds like a big job. How king-sized was Heracles' problem? Can you do the sums? 3,000 oxen doing 2 poos per day equals blank ox poos per day. Times 365 for every day in the year, but ignoring leap years, equals blank ox poos per year. Times 30 for every year since the stables were last cleaned equals blank ox poos altogether. Answers, 6,000 per day, 2,190,000 per year, 65,700,000 altogether. Heracles certainly had a mountain to climb. But Heracles managed it. How? Simple. Instead of messing about with a mop and bucket, he used his superpowers to change the direction of 2 rivers so that they flowed right through the stables and out the other side. The latter swept all before it, I'd hate to think where, and the stables were cleaned. There you go, Dad. And so the story goes, flushed with success at how strong and quick he'd been, Heracles decided to celebrate by setting up a competition in which everybody else could see how strong and quick they were. He called this competition the Olympic Games and dedicated them in honor of his father, Zeus. Flaming festivals. However they really came about, the ancient games were first and foremost a religious festival. That is, as well as the different sporting competitions, there was a lot of praying and sacrificing going on in honor of good old Zeus. Please, let me win. At first this just took one day. Then more events were added and they needed 2 days. Then more and more events were added, so that by 692 BC the Olympics were lasting a full 5 days. So what went on? Here's an early program bought from an early program seller. Yes, they had those too. Olympic Games, to be held at Olympia in the kingdom of Elis, for the honor of Zeus. Day 1, opening procession and sacrifices to Zeus. Judges swearing and athletes oaths, but bad language from spectators will not be tolerated. Day 2, pentathlon, poetry and all that sissy stuff. Chariot races. Day 3, more sacrifices to Zeus, foot races. Day 4, running and armor race, boxing, wrestling, pancration. Note, spectators caught fighting will be thrown out. Day 5, prize giving thanksgiving to Zeus, banquet for the winners. Day 1, promises, promises. On the opening day, the athletes all swear an oath to Zeus that they would play fairly. The judges did the same, promising also that they would keep secret anything they learned about a competitor, unless they'd found out he'd been cheating, then they had him whipped. Day 2, fun and games. The sporting event started on day 2. A 5-activity event came first. This was known as the pentathlon, from the Greek word pent, meaning 5. In the pentathlon, competitors had to throw the discus, throw the javelin, run, wrestle, and jump, though not all at once, of course. Ratchet, Mater, I'll give you a bunch of pence. I wish they'd hurry up and invent their rispica. The chariot races took place on the same day. They could be really gruesome. In every race, you would see whips smacking against sweating flesh and hear the awful cries of creatures in agony, and that was just what the chariot drivers were doing to each other. The poor old horses had an even tougher time, but even they didn't have as tough a time as the oxen on day 3. Day 3, mourning, knots and oxen. If you were going to take part in the ancient games, it was definitely not a good idea to be an ox. Why not? Because at the start of day 3 at every Olympiad, you and 99 other oxen would be slaughtered in honor of Zeus. You would then be cut up and your thighs burnt to ashes on the altar of Zeus as a sacrifice. Over the years, this pile of ash grew to 6 meters. Not quite sky high, but definitely thigh high. The rest of you would be eaten by the winning athletes at the big banquet, which ended the games. Day 3, afternoon. Oh, my foot. After the oxecubing, it was time for the foot races. The shortest was the stade, a straight race down the length of the arena, or stadium, as it came to be known because of its length. A stade measured the curious distance of 192.27 meters. Legends say that this measurement was also based on a supposed fact about Heracles. Was it 60 times the length of Heracles' foot, the distance Heracles could walk in one breath, the distance Heracles could run in one breath? Is this what they call athlete's foot? Answer, there are legends suggesting all three. Could they all be right? Maybe Heracles walked by putting one foot in front of the other, and because he was a bit of a thicko, he held his breath because he couldn't do two things at once, but because he was also a superhero, he did it so quickly the groundsman thought he was running. There were two other foot races, the Dialos of 2 stades to the end of the stadium and back, and the Dolichos of 24 stades. If you managed to win all three of these races, you were given the title Triastes, meaning triple winner. One fabulous runner named Leonidas of Rhodes won this title 4 games in a row, or should that be 4 games running? Day 4, perilous pancration. Day 4 was not for the faint-hearted. Basically, it was punch-up day with wrestling and boxing leading up to the meanest, nastiest, toughest sport ever invented, pancration. Pancration is a Greek word which is made from 2 other Greek words, pan meaning all, and kratu meaning be strong, take hold. So what does pancration mean? Strongest of all? Take hold of everything? From the sound of what went on, both of them. Pancration was certainly an event for the strongest men, but it was also one in which you were allowed to grab hold of everything, and as the fighters were naked, everything was definitely grabbable. That was my below the belly button special. Pancration, the 10 official rules. Rule 1, no biting. Rule 2, no gouging. Rules 3 to 10, no more rules. That's it. In pancration, you could do what you like to your opponent, except bite him or put your thumb in his eye and pull it out. Your thumb and his eye. The trouble was, of course, your opponent could do the same to you. Also, unlike wrestling and boxing nowadays, light and heavy fighters weren't separated. they were putting against each other, which was when the light ones did get separated, usually from their arms and legs. There were no rounds either for the fighters to take a breather. A pankration match just went on and on until somebody gave in or dropped, dead if necessary. Day 5, Prize-Giving Day. For those who survived to see it, Day 5 of the Ancient Games was one of celebration. A bit like a school of the arts assembly, this was the day when the prizes were given out to the winners of the different events. And what were the prizes? At the games themselves, not much. Just an olive wreath, and if you were brilliantly successful, the honor of having the games named after you. Apart from that, most of the athletes waited until they got home before they cashed in. Olympic champions would often be given money and good jobs, not asked to pay taxes, even be allowed to eat out free for life. Flaming fact, when the Olympics returned to Greece in 2004, every medal winner was given an olive wreath along with their medal. The wreaths for the marathon winners, however, were going to be special. They were going to come from the oldest tree in Greece. Unfortunately, there were two contenders from different villages. Both claimed their tree dated back to the time of the ancient Olympics, but unsurprisingly, neither of them were willing to cut it down and count the growth rings to prove it. In the end, the wreath for the winner of the women's marathon was made from one tree and that for the men's gold medalist from the other. Could you have been a judge at the ancient Olympics? At the ancient Olympics, judges had to be dead honest, otherwise they were likely to end up dead. See how you would have got on in this ancient Olympic quiz. 1. At the opening ceremony, you promise to be an honest judge. How do you show this? A. By signing an agreement. B. By saying you'll fall on your sword if you're not honest. C. By dipping your hands in blood. 2. You've got to make sure all the runners in the foot race start from the same place. What do you do? A. Scratch a line on the ground and make them stand behind it. B. Stand in front of them and then get out of the way fast. C. Hold the javelin out in front of them until they get the point. Sometimes I have to be blunt. 3. In the pankration event, a mixture of boxing and wrestling, one man turns up with his fists bound in leather and covered in metal. What do you do? A. Disqualify him. B. Tell him to be a good boy and take it all off. C. Let the fight go on. There. It's the big pankration final. Agrippa the Yard versus Mangulan the Mad. Agrippa grabs Mangulan's foot and twists it. Mangulan decides to have a go at strangling him. I'm hard. I'm mad. Agrippa twists Mangulan's foot a lot harder. But just as Mangulan raises one arm to give in, he manages to finish strangling Agrippa with his other arm. Agrippa drops down dead. What do you do? A. Declare Mangulan the winner. B. Declare Agrippa the winner. C. Declare it a draw, but say in your report that Agrippa was dead and lucky. 5. At the end of a running race, it looks like a dead heat between Nippilon and Whippilon. Who gets the victor's laurel wreath? A. You give them half each. B. You award it to the god Zeus. C. You make them run again. 6. The chariot race comes to a spine-tingling finish with ace driver Hamiltonian just crossing the line first. Who do you award the winner's wreath to? A. Hamiltonian's horse. B. Hamiltonian. Or C. The owner of Hamiltonian's horse. Step on the gas. Nah, it's time for a stable stop. 7. A runner is guilty of a false start. What do you do? A. Have him flogged. B. Make him go back 5 paces. C. Disqualify him if he does it again. 8. Women aren't allowed into the games, but you discover one retching from behind a pillar. What do you do? A. Have her thrown out. B. Have her thrown in jail. C. Have her thrown over the nearest cliff. Answers. 1. C. Ugh. The blood came from the animal sacrificed to Zeus and was taken to be holy. 2. A. This is how the saying, starting from scratch, came about. 3. C. Let the fight go on. This is how it was in pankration. If the other fighter hadn't been dressed the same, then he wouldn't have stood much chance. 4. B. The loser was the one who gave in. Mangulan did, Agrippa didn't, and never would, of course. 5. B. A pretty good deal for Zeus, who got a victor's wreath without even putting his shirts on. 6. C. All poor old Hamiltonian would have got was a piece of ribbon. 7. A. As you can imagine, there weren't too many false starts in the ancient games. 8. C. What's more, the distance she traveled didn't count for the long jump either. No ladies, please. Competitors who took part in the ancient games were easy to spot. They were all 1. True Greeks, 2. Not slaves, 3. Covered in oil, 4. Stark naked, and last but not least, 5. Men. Women could compete in the games in only one way, as the owner of a chariot and horses. Even then, women weren't allowed in as spectators. The law was that any woman discovered at the Olympic Games should be thrown headlong from the mountain of Typium, tipped over the edge, in other words. Rule number 4, of course, made it pretty tricky for a woman to sneak in without being noticed. That's why the rule was introduced, in fact, because at one games, a woman named Kalapatira did sneak in. Ella's Secret Service Games Undercover Entry Surveillance Section, GUESS. Report author, Ancient Spioness. Report. Whilst covering the games at Olympia undercover, I uncovered something not covered by the rules. On the day of the chariot racing, I saw a suspicious-looking person wearing a loose-fitting garment. I asked him who he was. "My son's trainer," said the person. Thinking there might be something going on, I waited until the race took place. As the person's son won his event, the person made the mistake of leaping over the fence and running across to give him a big kiss. What a plonker. All was then revealed. The person was none other than Kalapatira, the mother of the champion, and a woman. Action, none taken. The judges agreed that Kalapatira be forgiven on this occasion because her family are all great athletes and previous champions. Recommendation. In future, trainers should not be allowed to wear any loose-fitting garments. They shouldn't be allowed to wear any garments at all. Good idea. That way we won't need any undercover agents. You're fired, Spiranus. The Modern Olympic Games. The ancient games were finally abolished in AD 391 by the Emperor Theodosius. He was a Christian and objected to the games because they honored Zeus, a pagan god. The games had been going downhill for a while, though. Bribery and cheating had got worse and worse as athletes and their kings tried to capture the glory of being an Olympic champion. I am the fastest! By the time of Theodosius, the reputation of the Olympic Games as a festival in honesty and fair play was pretty much gone. But their memory lingered on, and as memories do, they got rosier and rosier. People forgot all the grotty bits and thought only about how the athletes trained and struggled to get better at their sports, for nothing more than the chance to win olive wreath to stick on their heads. Gradually, other Olympic games started up, trying to copy what had gone on all those years before in Greece. Well, not copy exactly. Country games. One of these games took place, and still does, in the small village of Wenflock in Shropshire. The Wenflock Olympian Games were started in 1850 by a man named William Pennybrooks. He was a doctor and wanted to encourage outdoor sports because he thought it was more healthy for the villagers than sitting in a pub all day. The Wenflock Games had some events that the ancient Greeks would have found very peculiar. Pig chase. You are bacon. Football. Blindfold wheelbarrow race. Cricket. Quoits. Old woman's pound of tea race. Let's have a quick cuppa first. Mind you, the pig chase sounds as though it could have been a pretty dirty event. As a local newspaper reported one year, the pig was started in the middle of the field and led its pursuers over hedge and ditch right into town where it took ground in a cellar bank. William Brooks wanted to get the Olympic Games started up again as more than just a small affair. He wanted to see an Olympics in which athletes of different countries competed against each other. His problem was that he couldn't get the support of England's important amateur athletic club. They were an incredibly snooty bunch, and most of their athletes came from the upper classes. They didn't like the idea of competing against grubby working-class people at all. Working-class-like, upper-class twit. But if Brooks didn't manage to convince the amateur athletic club, he did convince one very important man, Baron Pierre de Coubertin, a French aristocrat. De Coubertin believed that playing sport made you a better person. He also thought it was great for bringing people of different countries together, certainly better than the usual way of fighting a war. When he visited the Wenflock Games and heard Brooks' idea of reviving the ancient Olympics, he decided to do something about it himself. The difference between de Coubertin and Brooks was that the Frenchman knew a lot of important people. Aristocrats tend to. In fact, he knew so many important people that by 1893, only 2 years after visiting the Wenflock Games, de Coubertin had managed to set up an International Olympic Committee, IOC for short. From there, things moved quickly. This committee met, made arrangements, and generally sorted things out. Most unusual for a committee. So much so that, just 2 years later, on Easter Monday, 1896, the first Olympiad of the modern era began. For obvious reasons, it was staged in Athens, Greece. It's back, the Olympics, Part 2. Action, drama, the return. Over the years, the games grew in size with more and more countries taking part. More and more sports were introduced too, including winter sports, like ice hockey and figure skating. I'm freezing. Me too. In 1924, the summer and winter sports were separated, with the first Winter Olympics being held in Chamonix, France. The 21st Winter Games will be held in Vancouver, Canada, in 2010. Find all about them in the Frozen Olympics chapter on page 272. And so Pierre de Coubertin's dream has been realized. There has it. His dream was for the Olympics to be about athletes of all countries meeting in friendly, honest competition. No skullduggery or dirty tricks. Is that been the way? You'll soon find out. So start packing. Shorts, running shoes, swimming costume, tennis racket, hockey stick, weightlifting gear, spare horse. You'll need it all. Oh yes, and you better pack the next chapter in too. It's your crucial guide to what's on. Flaming Olympic Events, A Deafer's Guide. Are you a complete deafer when it comes to sports? Can you tell the difference between a hockey stick and a walking stick? You think that badminton is a dreadful good mitten, or that weightlifting is carrying your bag home from school? Then this is the guide for you. Here's the idea behind every Olympic sport, with no confusing complications or jelly-legging jargon to put you off. Amazing Athletics. You do one of three things in athletics. Run, jump, or throw something. For a running race, you go as fast as you can. If it's a short race, you go faster, and if it's a long race, you go slower. You can still win a short race if you go slower, of course, so long as you go faster than everybody else. In the same way, you can lose a long race by going slower than somebody else who's going slow faster. Get it? Boy, this is the marathon, isn't it? Jumping is either long, high, or very high. In long jumping, you end up in a sand pit you're not allowed to play in. High jumping is more fun because you dive onto a bouncy castle without the castle bit, but less fun because there's always a bar in the way. For very high jumping, called pole vaulting, you get a better bounce, but you have to use a pole, which is very awkward to fit into your bag. To remember the throwing events, think of school dinners. The idea is to throw something as far as you can, and you can choose between a discus, a sort of dinnerless dinner plate, a javelin, a fork with only one prong, a shot, a school dinner dumpling, but not quite so hard or heavy, or a hammer, a school dinner dumpling with parts cut out of a saucepan. It's a UFO! It's a record! People who can't make up their mind what they like best can go in for all of them. The heptathlon is for women, and involves a mixture of seven events. Not bad, eh, Edna? Yuck. Men are even worse at making up their mind, so they have a decathlon of 10 events taking place over 2 days. On the first day, it's the 100 meters, long jump, shot put, high jump, and 400 meters. And on the second day, it's 110 meters, hurdles, discus, pole vault, javelin, and 1,500 meters. Phew. Jumping gymnastics. There are three gymnastics disciplines. In artistic gymnastics, competitors score points using equipment like a horse you can't ride, a beam that doesn't shine, and rings that don't make a sound. Rhythmic gymnastics involves exercises using things like ribbons, which the competitors hope they'll turn into winning bows. Finally, to be the best at trampoline gymnastics, you need plenty of spring in the summer. You have to be very supple for gymnastics, which is why some people call it gymelastics. Curious combat. There are five combat sports. Fencing is for people with a dual personality. You have a sword, which isn't called a sword, but either a flail, a saber, or an épée. Each of these has a handle and a pointy end. The pointy end has a button on it so that it isn't too pointy. The idea is to touch the other person with a not very